All right. Do you want the honors of starting us?
Welcome to the Controversial Exchange, episode something.
Yeah.
On the ABA landscape, brought to you by
Nobody.
Ryan O'Donnell, the man, the legend, the myth. Welcome, Ryan. Thank you for joining us here today on fresh Controversial Exchanges.
We're going to
discuss the landscape of behavior analysis.
All right. I'm stoked. So I've been wanting to create something like this for a few different reasons for a while. I'm hoping today's episode is really serving two functions for people. Just a general informational episode to talk about kind of different organizations, what they do in the field, things like that. But also this like interpretation of what kind of goes beyond those organizations, what happens behind the scenes that people may or may not be aware of. And in a sense, this is kind of like my advisor in undergrad, one of them was like, do you really, well, I approached him and I said, like, I think I want to really go for this. I get a master's degree in it. And he's like, really think on that. Like, you're about to commit a lot. And I was like, why are you trying to talk me out of this? You know, he's like, it's an uphill battle, like in every way possible. It's an uphill battle. Like, it's not a way in which people think about, you know, the world. In a sense, our air quote heyday was like before this cognitive revolution. And I don't know if he was implying that there's a politics implied, you know, or like a part of our field. But I feel like that was also like a warning shot of, you know, like there's no easy path in this field, essentially. And so it was something that I wished that was more explicitly shared with me earlier in the field, or in my upbringing in the field as well. And so this ABA landscape, as I'm calling it, is really just that. I'd like to have some more information out there, and I wish I had this earlier in my career, but there's actually more going into this field than people maybe realize when it comes to politics of things. And so I wanted to start at this like more high level, molar level of the 30,000 foot view of what's going on and who's out there and whatnot. And really, I think we can go through this somewhat relatively fast, but if we find any threads, let's just roll with it, all right?
Before you do that, can I just say that I find it so hilarious that everybody that does what we do has this moment in their career, and we were just talking about this before we even started the recording, that like you think there's going to be a grown-up or a mentor or like an adult in the room that's going to hold your hand and like be like, okay, this is what you need to know about what's going on. And it's always just that real like sage Mr. Miyagi innuendo conversation that you don't understand what everything actually was implied or inferred until you're knee deep in all this shit, you know.
That was it.
Like that was the moment you're describing.
And that's it. I don't and it's funny, we're gonna bring up, I'll circle back around, but we're gonna bring up an issue that happened in the field that was pretty publicly noted regarding ABI and a resignation letter from one of the presidents. And it was around that time. And I felt like this could have been made more explicit to me. And I see why they withheld potentially because they didn't want to contribute to without knowing all the information. But it's also like, man, this would have been nice to know because it circles around. So I think a little bit of a historical perspective. This is my understanding, but also like we can link a few different articles that are describing these different positions as well and the historical perspectives in our journals. There was essentially three waves of what we call cognitive behavioral therapy. Really, behavior analysis was born through Watson. Skinner started really jumping into this stuff and expanding things, cumulative record, all that sort of stuff, things we've talked about on this podcast before. And that was like our heyday, as I understand it. Behavior analysis was the ultimate thing, the biggest thing. We talked about this in the episode with Skinner and his APA acceptance speech. Huge. And then wave two, we can't necessarily solve all the problems. And there's also this mentalistic, dualistic approach that starts to creep in. And that just takes over everything. The air quotes, cognitive revolution. And I wanted to bring that up because this recent growth in the BCBA certificate and the system that's around that makes it seem like this is a heyday. There's definitely a lot going on, but we were like the dominant field of psychology back in the day. And where that moved us to was essentially we were like a part of organizations like the American Psychological Association. Like there was discussions and like in a sense that was the professional home of where behavior analysts were, but it didn't feel like a home as it's been stated in a lot of different areas. And so what they did is they started to branch off and build this Midwestern Association of Behavior Analysis. And this is what is now called the Association of Behavior Analysis International. The International was added, I think, in the 90s. But we chose to branch off as a community. Not everyone agreed with it, but we chose to branch off as a community and start to do our own thing. This is why you see, like, Florida Institute of Technology, where I went to school. It was a school of behavior analysis. They made it really explicit that they were not in the school of psychology. And these are all decisions that I think start to impact our field at the end of the day. Now, this second wave of behavior therapy and it not really fitting our style whatsoever and us branching off started to lead to the addition of more journals, JABA, JAB being born, much more journals after that as well. And really, that started what led to the Florida certification, which then led into the Behavior Analysis Certification Board. And so like, that's kind of your like history in a nutshell, way too condensed. But that
I want to say one thing. I didn't even think about it as a cognitive revolution shoving behavior analysis out, because my understanding from anything that I've learned or any class, any historical perspective I've been taught on this is it was more related as a reactionary thing as a result of like the behavior mod stuff that went on at that time period. Because a lot of people talk about how, or not a lot of people, I mean, it's just the facts that, you know, the way that behavior analysis, the way behavioral interventions were utilized under the context of behavior modification, you know, kind of, not kind of, it did create a pretty aversive world out there and really painted us in a pretty difficult light. And then you pair that with A Clockwork Orange that coincided with that book and ultimately movie that kind of, that additionally added just like visuals to the realities of how behavior analysis could be used in, or behavior modification at the time could be used for, you know, evil or whatever, or just, you know, obviously nefarious means, paired with the fact that this new emerging paradigm had come out between the 60s and the 70s and the psychedelic movements that went on there. And then you had people experimenting with like MDMA and like psychedelic drugs and looking for, you know, you had also, what was it called? New age thinking and all that stuff brought out a lot more dualism on top of that. So as a result, that kind of enhanced the momentum that a second wave cognitive revolution had that kind of shoved us to the sidelines and kind of created this rift. So I think all that stuff, all those are pretty important factors when we're thinking about this, because historical context is everything, right? You know, especially when we're talking about how do you see something like you're describing that is, I mean, the dominant ideological bend in a field, there's no other way to put it, to being almost like a peripheral subset of a discipline. I mean,
yeah,
you know, so
I don't want to
back to Jabba Jab, but
I don't want to, I agree with that. Thanks for that. I don't want to discredit the position that we're in, where we're at right now, but everything that I've understood is from the historical perspective is things were far different. Like we had obscene amounts of funding for ridiculous projects, really cool stuff going on because of that. And it's clear that, you know, private money and this money for autism and stuff like that is helping us grow in these sort of capacities. But I found more and more recently as I talk to folks that are getting in the field, like that doesn't seem to be communicated that, you know, we're really, if anything, we're starting to kind of slowly bounce back from where we were years ago. But there's a few different things here. So first of all, governing agencies, I think are important to talk about. That's what I'm calling them. It's not like they're part of the government, but they're really out there governing the practice in some sort of capacity. I think the first one, clearly the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, I'm not gonna speak on behalf of them today or anything like that, but they're important for the sake of protecting the consumer, just setting out the credentials of what a minimum competency should be. One thing that was super interesting, I don't know what your thoughts were on this, but they have been worldwide as like part of their mission and vision for a long time, and they've recently shifted that a bit. But first, just to read off their site as of like January 10th, 2020, the mission states to protect consumers of behavior analysis services worldwide, by systematically establishing, promoting, and disseminating professional standards. With their vision being to help solve a wide variety of socially significant problems by increasing the availability of qualified behavior analysts around the world. And so there's a few things I guess I wanted to like cover here real quick, which is they're out there, first of all. It's a thing. If you haven't heard of it, you should probably go check that thing out. They're in really supposed to be focusing, is my understanding, as the protecting the consumer and really the name that is associated with anybody that holds that sort of certificate, such as a board certified behavior analyst or assistant behavior analyst or the registered behavior technician, et cetera. I think the thing that's sometimes not really talked about though is they're accredited themselves by accreditation standards. So like for them to be able to test and be able to hand out these certificates, they have to follow certain standards. And so I feel like sometimes you run into the field of people disagreeing with how decisions are being made. And that's part of the second half of this podcast is like what goes behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, this is always housed within a much larger system. And so I remember one of my past mentors actually is Melissa Nosick. She is deputy CEO right next to Jim Carr in there on the board right now, which is essentially the two folks that are really tasked with chasing the vision and carrying out the mission and vision day to day. And I believe it's about a 5-year time span that they can work within from the time where they, you know, think that they might need to make a change to where they have to announce the change to allow people to be able to alter those sort of things. So like the most recent, or let's take a practical one. If you're going to roll out a new task list, right, on what should constitute the minimum standards in behavior analysis, if you change that overnight, what you do is you're gonna cause problems for everyone that is currently trying to go through their coursework and such. And so what I'm trying to get at here is like these standards are set up to where they have to communicate them in a certain things like these standards, and if they want to change something like this, has to be carried about in a very specific process. And that's coming from essentially a governing board over the top of them, which is the NCCA, which is the National Commission for Certifying Agencies. And so I feel like sometimes, I don't know if you feel this way, but like, let's take the most recent example of what's coming down the pipeline, which is they made an announcement that they needed to essentially change the way in which they were approaching international certificates. So do you remember that email?
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. It set the internet on fire. The behavior internet on fire. Are you kidding me? I mean, I'm pretty sure I could smell the hair burning. People set themselves through my screen. People were pretty livid over that.
Yeah. So
yeah, I don't know.
I'll describe it real quick.
I
want your idea on it. So, it's pretty simple in the sense of they came out with some statements that, they need to change the way in which they are really going about evaluating who can hold the credentials that they oversee. So the board certified behavior analyst, assistant behavior analyst, the RBT. And the thing that really upset a lot of people is it was a very clear announcement that the changes were going to be a fewfold. First of all, that they are stepping back and anybody that's not in the US or Canada after, I believe it's starting 2023, will not be able to pursue those sort of things, or it's not going to have any weight in the countries outside of the United States and Canada. But the other side there, too, was they were changing the testing languages and what was going to be acceptable language, and really just limited only, at this point, to English only, which was a whole different discussion, I think.
Those are two separate issues.
That's not really the point of this. And,
I mean, we can talk about both of those problems. I mean, I think it's reasonable to talk, not problems, but both of those are two significant, well, they are the bones of contention with this change.
Yeah.
One that as the governing agency, they're withdrawing basically from the global theater.
I will say that, there's statements, and it's unclear exactly how this help will come, but that they're all about sharing and trying to help these sort of people internationally with setting up their standards. But the biggest concern being, like, there's established, I believe it was stated, there was already 61 international verified course sequences for behavior analysis. And so...
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a lot.
Yeah, so you're altering the master's training programs of 61 different programs out there as a result of this announcement. Now,
I don't believe that. Why?
If they built in that they're a part of this BACB credentialing system outside of the U.S.
I mean, and all that changes is the terminal result that they can get certification. The content stays, though.
That's it. So, and really, that's a discussion for folks internationally. It's a discussion for, like, I could be a part of that, but I really don't think that my input's nearly as valuable as somebody else, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I feel like, for the powers that be to kind of sort out with the international community. And, like, if I can help out, cool.
Well, what do you think about it? I mean, what do you think about the fact that, like, the BACB says, listen, we're a North American organization now. We're not a global organization. We cannot certify these people. We're not going to. Here's a three-year timeline or whatever.
Yeah.
We're going to have a three-year timeline.
Well, I guess there's two points.
And
first,
we're going to offer our test exclusively in English.
So to tie it into why I wanted to talk about this was, I think that there's a few things that go behind the scenes that people don't necessarily always catch. And so for me, I never realized that there was this NCCA that was overseeing the BACB. I never realized that they had rules. I feel like these people are folks that are just like, where they are setting up rules. But it turns out they have rules to follow too, whether that's federal laws in the United States or what's outlined in that NCCA, they have things to follow. And so for me, when I see a change like that, it's realization of there's other people influencing them. And second fold, trying to understand like what was influencing the people that made those sort of decisions, which I think that was my point of contention with this specific change, is there was a little bit of information that was shared online about how they made this sort of decision, but it's already becoming much more clear that there was a lot more information that could have been shared that hasn't been shared yet. And so, for example, I got it, I think, yesterday. We're recording this on the 10th of January. An official letter. It appears to be coming out of primarily folks in the European area. At least that's who is tagged. And they've lined up some interesting facts on how the board apparently was at conferences discussing as if things were normal much after the decision was made by the board of directors to make this sort of change in August. And so there's a disconnect by a few months where they were out allegedly discussing issues with certificate holders and future certificate holders, as this is how these sort of things are, you know, all it's kind of normal. Everything's par for course, right? When really there's some big heavy-handed things coming down. So I feel like with that one specifically, it's like, I think there's a lot more information that could be going on there. Maybe it's time for a PR firm to guide
to
some
me,
of this.
That's all superficial shit. That's like, I mean, if you're not ready to tell people, I mean, let's pretend like withdrawing from the international stage is being pregnant and you're not ready to tell people. Yeah, you're going to act normal because you're not ready to tell people.
Yeah.
So like, well, it's your prerogative. And also the information isn't ready, locked in, finalized, or prepared to be disseminated. But
for,
I mean,
sure.
Before we get to that though, let's backstep for a sec. And for real, like, so like, tell our listeners, like, what's your opinion on the thing? Like, do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it's a bad idea? Like, what's
well,
your subjective opinion?
Well,
not,
here's
not
my,
the, not
I'm not
to
trying
judge
to...
people, but just like from your own visceral response, like, what
well,
do you
I'm
say
not...
on it?
My first thought was like, whoa, to be dropping that on like a holiday season is like, hey, this is happening. I really, Dimitri, I don't think that I have enough information to be able to judge that sort of thing at all. And that was my stance for anybody that asked me is it's, I think, and that's part of this discussion is it's clear that there's a certain amount of information that's shared at certain points. And I get, you know, your point of your analogy there on when it's time to tell people, but to like, for example, they stayed in there, like it was a multi-year discussion about whether or not they should do it. And they looked at different things. But I think the largest thing that's come out of this is the international community of certificate holders saying, where did these discussions happen? Yeah. And that's the thing
that's
for me
fair.
Is like, I've been lucky to be able to travel around and talk to people in different capacities, and I saw discussions like this happening, but never as a result of the board. It was just things that people were talking about because there was a pressure in their local community. Like, they were asking questions of, should we follow the BACB standards? Should we develop something that's not, you know, formally based in the North American landscape, the U.S. to be specific? And so I really, man, at the end of the day, like, I don't think I have enough information. I don't think I ever will unless I wanted to jump into a system like that. And I feel like that's part of the problem is not enough information flowing going on from these larger entities. And we're getting a little bit before this, but like that's going to be one of the themes of this is like we need more information. But what was your take? Oh, I mean, and hold on. The English only is complete bullshit. Like I can't get behind. Like
I can get
you're saying that you're going to provide an English only test in the United States and in Canada when the official languages are beyond just the English language.
Well, America
and we know
have, the United States doesn't have an official language, so.
And yeah, sorry, Canada has English and French, I
and
believe.
French, yeah.
But we know the number of folks that are like Latino and Spanish speaking.
Yeah. At least Spanish, man.
Yeah.
At least Spanish.
And they've got these things translated. And this is where like, I know they're translated. I know people have been able to take tests in different languages, but I still don't know the extent to which the decision was made to do that. And
I mean, the U.S. demographics alone, by 2050, we're going to be majority Latino in this country. Like Spanish is going to play a big role in what America is going to look like. So, I mean, I think that we need to get on that train.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping today what we can do is just like an appreciation for there's a lot of shit that goes behind the scenes, a lot of shit. Yeah. And some of it's dictated to us. Some of it you can work your ass off and get in a position to be able to influence potentially, but it's out there, right?
I think the thing that's hard for me on this is that both point of views seem fair, which seems like an impossible or ridiculous statement to make or like a hedging, because I'm not trying to hedge. Because, I mean, if anyone's listening to the podcast, they know that we don't hedge here. But at least do our best not to hedge. But let me explain my point. On the one hand, number one, the punk rocker in me wants to say, fuck the man. Like, how dare you put this carrot out there and put people in this position to want to represent a field out globally, represent this idea that behavior analysis is transcendent and it goes beyond culture and like participate in that kind of zeitgeist moment, right?
Yeah.
That kind of mindset that you instill in the community and get people to think that way and then retract without some of the conversation. And also, which also kind of alters the identity intrinsically with what it means to be a BCBA because it kind of, you know, so on the one hand, I get it that the outrage around that. But on the other hand, though, like if you want to be fair-minded about it, again, with the limited information that we have based on what we saw, there's a couple different spins or interpretations you can put on it. You can also say that the BACB is being wholly responsible, like they're being ethical. They're saying, hey, listen, there's a limitation in the scope that an organization based out of Boulder, Colorado, that was initially intended to serve 1,500 people or whatever it was, now has blown up to 37,000 certificates, just their BCBAs, plus 66 or whatever, a ridiculous amount of RBTs, not to mention the 100, there's about 192 free countries in the world. So that's 192 languages just in that.
Yeah.
Some of them have another 6 or 7 languages inside of them. So 500 possible, 6,000, I don't know, pick a really crazy number of possible languages out there to mitigate things, to translate the science in. And not only that, but also adapt it so that it fits within a cultural awareness, cultural competency landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whoa, like, are we biting off more than we can chew? And is this a reasonable thing for us to be in, number one? Number two is, let's look at other fields that we can imitate or model that follow a board certification type scenario. Well, who are the other people that we know are board certified? I think you have, board certified neurosurgeons?
Yeah, right? So it's
board
clear.
Certified heart surgeons?
Yeah.
Like, similar types of disciplines. And if you think about it, they're regulated by the American Medical Association. They're not regulated by the international. So, like, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, Europe has their own version of the DSM even. So diagnostic criteria vary continentally, right?
Yeah.
So if you can have something like that, it's almost the most responsible thing that they can do. It just is unfortunate the way it's happening because the intention and the mindset and the way that the culture and the identity of behavior analysts has been built around it it kind of falters in the face of this, I think, or like disintegrates in response to it.
Yeah, I think you stated very well. And for me, to add to it, it's clear that we're following this medical model. That's what people are talking about when they're citing, you know, things that don't have international standards, like you described with the American Medical Association and such. And yeah, like my only thing I did put out there publicly was like, I think the best time to have made a discussion like this would have been when it was first conceived of, the BACB. The second best time is now, because if you're going to make something so drastic, you've got to be able to allow people to start making changes in their local areas. And it's just, it really sucks all the way around. But yeah, I think that's an example of there's things that go on in this field. And that was one that was like, for people like that, that could potentially alter what you're doing and how you're going about things very quickly. So for example, I know that the UAE had built in that the BACB certificates were a part of their licensure system. And so by saying that it's no longer going to be valid as of that 2023, as it would stand, that potentially puts some forks in the roads for them, because their licensure is built off of it. They've got people already in a grad program. So the people actively sitting right now get that sort of email and they're like, wait, what am I signing up for? What happens in 3 years? And so...
If you think about it, though, this is a good thing. And I this is where my take is on it as far as why I think this is a good thing. Because I think that whenever you have a high concentration of control, power, and dictates, you have these kind of like unilateral decisions that put people in a position to be incredibly pissed off because three people in a room, a smoky backlit room, decided to make a move that affects an entire community. In this case, even though there's going to be a temporary, like, painful moment in response to it, it's going to empower and actually force the hand of individual countries and therefore societies that and communities of behavior analysts to form a version of this that fits better into whatever system, whatever cultural context that they're existing in, that can act as a counterbalance, you know? So I think it's a good – I think the idea of having – 192 BACBs mm-hmm. of different, you know, cultural value, different mindset, different perspective from a societal point of view. Just, you know what I mean? Pushing and pulling on each other and nudging the standards and potentially creating a different kind of international conference. I think that's a great idea. I think that now is that going to happen in 5 years or is that going to take 10, 20, maybe even 30 years to actually realize? For sure. This is a long game type scenario. Well, but ultimately, I think it's better if you think about it that way. Now, on the other side, opposite side of that, it could just be like, okay, great, congratulations. None of these countries have the infrastructure or enough people that are qualified to be able to do that, Dimitri. So, cool story, bro. I really love your dreams, but really, what we're witnessing is the collapse of behavior analysis across, you know, most of those countries, sans like European nations and some in the like South Pacific, Asia, or whatever that have. Yeah. You know, resources to be able to accommodate that. But everybody else is fucked.
I think the devil's going to be in the details with that one. And that's really where we'll see. And yeah, I guess to sum it up, I sometimes really just question like the information that's shared. And I get that there's timelines and what do you pick and whatnot. But I feel like erring on like the side of caution and saying here's more information would have been useful. Yeah, dude. There's already a Facebook group of 3,500 people in the last 10 days that are starting to discuss an international body that essentially would be competing with that sort of thing, and saying,
oh, really?
We could do this. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Just like an anti-BACB.
International Behavior Analysts, where they're discussing not only a reply to the BACB, but also what are the degrees of freedom they have to be able to start exploring these sort of things.
Well, I know that I have a person that I associate with who is, and I don't want to use their name because I don't want to, but I can say that they are very, very integral to the first course sequence that was established in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that, and I haven't spoken to this person at all, but I'm just guessing that they are probably pretty upset about what's going on right now. And I've heard some rumblings in the background from people from mutual friends and mutual contacts that it's pretty fucked up and pretty mad about it. But
Let's bring this.
Man, like, how can you possibly do this without pissing somebody off? Like,
Well, I want to bring this back a little bit for a second because I want to describe a few of the other players, and then we can dive into this example from a little bit of a different lens. And so I mentioned that Midwestern Association Behavior Analysis, Midwest Association Behavior Analysis, they developed, I think, in the 70s. It's now the Association of Behavior Analysis International. And really, what they positioned themselves to be in is a scientific organization at the end of the day. And I was going to scroll here. Of course, it's not readily available. Oh, my gosh. You click their About Us and it takes you to their homepage. Okay. I was just going to read their mission. Okay. This is our main statement about their on their About page. So since 1974, the Association of Behavior Analysis International has been the primary membership organization for those interested in the philosophy, science, application, and teaching of behavior analysis. ABI provides many services to its members and the field, including the following. So there's events, conferences, and the such. Job placement boards is what they also list here. Journals, there's a number of different journals. Affiliated chapters, so there are, I want to say, over 100 affiliate chapters. So those are your things like your Cal ABBA, your Nevada ABBA, your Ohio ABBA, your Missouri ABBA, all those different ABBAs that you hear out there can be affiliate chapters and usually are. You have your special interest groups, which are just really sub-areas of behavior nerds that want to nerd out on a specific topic or area. There's
SIGs.
There's a lot of those SIGs, yes. And then there's Inside Behavior Analysis, which is really just a publication that they do to kind of talk about what's going on within their organization, their structure. This is based out of Michigan, I believe, and is ran as a nonprofit, just like the BACB. I wanted to mention those. These things are nonprofits and ran as such, since they're these sort of professional organizations. And so,
nonprofit, by the way, for those who are wondering, not to totally throw you off kilter here, but.
Yeah.
Fun fact about nonprofits is that the only difference between a for-profit and a nonprofit is that the primary purpose of the organization is to serve the community. That does not mean that they are not there to make money. Just to, I think that it's important to preface that.
It just, yeah.
Because people use the nonprofit label as a presupposition of altruistic intentions or necessary some semblance of, like, you know, above the fray, and that's not the case. Nonprofits very much profit. It just so happens that their mission statements and their functions and their tax status put them in a position where, number one, everything is publicly available so you can see how their money comes in and goes out, but also that the primary purpose they serve to the community is to the community and or whatever, some type of
thing
like that, service,
public service, public. What you do with that profit or can do with that profit changes too.
A little bit, yeah. But, I mean, for the most part, it's pretty.
They're much more similar than you'd think.
Yes. There's a reason billionaires all make nonprofits that are their foundations. Anyway, sorry.
So,
little side note.
No, it's all right. So that's a bit about what they do and what they provide. I would say this is a good example of a membership organization where you renew your membership typically annually, is the example here, and you're supposed to get certain benefits. Those benefits can depend on, you know, if I'm signed up for their affiliate chapter, say in Nevada ABA, I would get a different set of ones based on the California ABA. They're trying to set them up positionally based on the state, the needs, the region, things like that. And I think an important thing here is those are usually elected officials of behavior analysis that are usually because they do something else good in behavior analysis or a good practitioner, they're well known, things like that. They get elected being these sort of positions. We are very, very, very much this promote within culture of, oh, you did good on that thing. Let's put you over here. So there is almost never people that are outside of our field that are on the boards of these sort of organizations, which I think is a detriment to us being able to grow and learn from other fields. And it just, if anything, puts some blinders up. Really can't back that statement up because I've never seen anybody, you know, pile on a bunch of like Silicon Valley CEOs to give us feedback on how to go about building our field. But I just don't see the point in making sure that we only have behavior analysts running the ship. And I think it's operating in a fear of, it's operating in a place of fear of not being able to retain, you know, what we want to do and that kind of scientific academia rigor kind of flooding in. What's your take?
I don't know. I haven't thought about this before. I'm kind of a purist when it comes to these questions, so I typically am like, who cares if we don't have other people involved, but on the other side, I can see your point. I don't know. I think when we're talking about professional organizations and we're talking about governing bodies, there's always a business side, so you want to have business-minded people just to make sure the organization is sustainable over time. But, I mean, if we're talking about who's responsible for designing, developing, disseminating the information and or what we consider the soul of the field, I think I'd rather – I mean, the only people that should be doing that are behavior analysts. I don't see the value in having, like, an engineer involved in that. Yeah. Unless there's a systems question, you know, or even a physicist or a mathematician or like a biologist or an occupational therapist, which is what it would end up being, some behavior analysis adjacent field that I personally think has no value or contributory authority to what we would need or have. I don't know if I agree with that.
I think the technology fields would be so useful for us, man. If you had folks that were in computer science, AI, and those sort of things sitting in, because what they could do is they could offer like modern solutions to the current problems that the field's facing. So I think it'd be a mix.
But that's a systems question, right?
Okay,
Those are different things.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think boundaries would have to be put in place, but the fact that we don't have those feedback loops from other organizations like that, or sorry, other fields and other perspectives, I think leads us to some problems as a culture. Sure. So like I mentioned, they host events. They host a lot of different events. ABI does. They're expensive as hell, which is what most people say, to be able to go to these sort of things. I would agree. I would also say that, I mean, clearly I'm in a pretty privileged spot in different ways in my life to be able to go to these sort of things all the time, but it's also been something that I have, dedicated the resources to. You don't like this, huh?
I don't not like it. I just can't stand it whenever you do that one thing. So I'm giving you this stink eye. You know what I'm talking about. You know, that thing with the stuff in the face.
Let's cut that out. No, let's cut that out. That's cool. Hold on. I would say...
Listen, man, let me tell you this. I think that prefacing this... No, I mean, we can leave it in. I think that prefacing this stuff is irrelevant. Like, and also, I don't think that it I think that it cheapens what you're trying to say, which is the fact that
there's so much
stuff going on, you know, and these things are expensive. Like, it doesn't matter.
Well, what I was going to say is these events are expensive as hell, but I think it comes down to also figuring out how you're going to get your return on those sort of things.
Yeah, ROI, baby.
Yeah, and so for me, like ABI symbolizes me being able to interact with people that wear the 35, 40, 45-year-old member badges, which means that they've been in that organization since like day one. And for me, loving history, loving good reads, things like that, trying to sort this field out, it's been extremely valuable to me. And it's hard to always calculate that ROI in certain ways, but the people I can call now and access and invite out or like get on the channel, like, oh my gosh, is that thing returned? And I really think it comes down to, can you figure out a way to figure out what you're going for and link that up to your return on your investment?
Yeah, you are such a unique person though in relation to that, because I mean, shameless is not the right word, but willingness to put yourself out there where 99% of people, like, I mean, if I saw, I don't know, anyone, I would not necessarily approach them. And I've had previous, even with people that I've met before, which is kind of, because it's almost like I don't want to bother them while they're in their element, you know, getting their praise from people who have never seen them.
Me selfish and a jackass. Then.
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, like, you know, go like, because I mean, here's the thing. Like, I've been to ABAI three times. Yeah.
Okay.
And not in consecutive years. Obviously, I've been a member of the BACB since I became a certificant. I've been on and off a member of my state association. I was a public policy chair for a year, and I resigned because I got tired of talking about doing stuff and not actually doing anything. So I started a podcast with you and decided to broadcast my opinions across the world. That was better than writing a white paper that would never get published on the website because of whatever fucking reason. I just think that when we're talking about, you know, the ABA landscape, what we're really talking about is illuminating who are the gatekeepers, right? And also who are the different organizations that are heavy influencers and that operate in some ways that are mysterious to a lot of people who aren't necessarily tapped in.
And I feel like all of these have a quite strong component of academia sort of mindset CV building where you're building up your stature in some sort of way and like your significance in the field. So for example, almost all of the affiliate chapters, I've gone to a ton of the events the last couple of years, but they're really built around, you know, this is a position, you serve on it for a couple of years, you put on your vita, it looks good, it feels good, you can do some good, which is cool. But there's a difference between the organizations that do that and then the folks like Calaba. Calaba ran this thing as a business to serve the practitioner's needs. There's a reason Calaba has $1 million plus on their conference budget to be able to work with, and they can do the size of an organ thing that they can throw every year. And there's and it's because of those differences in the approach to these sort of things. And so
I've never been to Calaba, but I can tell you right now, I've watched the videos and I want to go. Yeah.
Good.
Like, it's amazing. It's better than, it looks better than any ABA I've ever been to.
I'm biased as hell because I made those, but I hope that was part of the intention. Sometimes when I make videos,
I swear to God, I didn't even realize those were your videos. So I accidentally made you feel like, crushed, bro. Never mind. I knew that. I knew it.
No, but the funny thing with those, if it's the ones that you're talking about, which it probably is, but
it probably is.
Well, dude, there's sometimes, this would be a whole different discussion that'd be fun, is I'm sometimes wondering when I make stuff, it's just like, is this really going to line up to reality? Because if not, it's going to paint the organization bad, it's going to paint me bad for like not capturing it the right way. And sometimes, especially with the internet, like if you lean to hype over like reality, it does better. So I would be interested if you go, if you're like, you got this thing doesn't make any fucking sense. This is
like
bullshit.
PodCon. I can't wait to see that shit. Like, Gary Vaynerchuk's about to come out of the ceiling. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, man, like, I think people sometimes are like, you know, which one to go to and things like that when it comes to all these different events, and especially the ABI affiliate ones, the NABAs, CALABAs, OAPs, all those sort of things. They're ran different. They're serving different needs. And the easiest way to figure that out is just to start reading up on what their goals are, what they're doing. Almost all of them also have a section on their website that lays out how they're ran, how their board of directors run, the decisions they make, their priorities as well. If they're not hosted, it's usually because someone's so damn busy and overworked that they're not hosted, but they're written somewhere. So you just have to email and find those sort of things. So
other than state organizations, ABAI and BACB, what are the heavy players that we should know about?
Okay, one last thing that was really important with the ABI is that they run what they call the verified course sequence. And so this is people that are essentially saying that the content that is being taught in the master's program is up to sufficient quality to be stamped as a verified course sequence and something that's good enough for the science behavior analysis to keep going on. This was ran under the BACB, the Behavior Analysis Certification Board, but it moved over. Okay, that'll be important in a little bit. So other things that are going on out there. Association of Professional Behavior Analysts, which popped up after ABI. APBA. I've actually never attended one of their events. 2020, it's here in it's in Denver, Colorado. I'm considering going over for a day to check it out since it's a flight away. But the goal here of APBA is essentially to my perception was to fill in the other side of the equation of what ABI was focusing on. So ABI is focusing on science and that sort of area. Really, APBA is trying to focus on the practitioner's needs. And so they run an annual event, very similar. It's about 750 people, I think, or so, or 1,000 that went to it. And they have their own agendas and things that they're working on. I would read you a mission statement and about, but their about section is, I'd be reading to you for 5 minutes on this, which is not a bad thing. Like, you get to know a lot, but there's nothing that
it is robust.
There's nothing really close. There's multiple membership classes. It's a membership organization, meaning that you are subscribing again to it yearly to be able to access their benefits. And ABI and APBA both have paywalled content, meaning that there's going to be different things behind the paywall, whether it's information about what's going on, what they're doing, or if it's their past conferences and recordings, things like that. There's going to be value behind here. And I don't think that one's better than the other per se. My understanding is they both serve different niches within the field. But I'll bring up a little bit of the issues of them all working together a little bit later in this podcast. What else? The Cambridge Center for Behavioral Studies. One of my favorites when it comes to
the best.
Just really cool information that usually ends up being topics that you and I love a lot, right? When it comes to theory, philosophy, and the implications of those sort of things. Their website's sometimes a little hard to navigate and get around because there's just a lot there. I know they've been working on fixing those links. There was like dead links all over the place years ago that were just kind of causing problems. But oh my gosh.
The Cambridge Center for Behavioral Studies is a treasure in the behavior world that keeps alive and available stuff that is out of print and that you can never get. So, you know, if you're looking for a book that might be out of print or if you're looking for something very interesting and unique, that's the place to go. Like, for example, you can buy a navigatable PDF copy of Izzy Gold Diamond's Blue Books from there.
Yes.
You can get a copy of Joe Harless's The Eden Conspiracy from the conversation we had with Carl Binder. That's a absolutely amazing book on education reform.
One of my favorites.
From a behavioral perspective.
One of my favorites is this this book here, Behavioral Science, Tales of Inspiration, Discovery, and Service. What it is just really badass behavior analysts, in my mind, describing a lot of the in-between the margins, the things that happened that weren't necessarily put out there. Man, there's some dope stuff here. Like, there's discussions about entire companies that were built to solve problems that people don't even realize were built off behavioral technology. Closed captioning was a service developed by, in part, a behavior analyst. I'm going to withhold the name just so motherfuckers will buy this and go check it out. But, like, the reason we have closed captioning is because of a behavior analyst. Like, how damn cool is that? Sesame Street was working because of the same behavior analyst. Isn't that dope?
Yeah.
Like yeah, shit, man, that we all experience. And people never know it. They just don't pay attention. It's because it's in these like, little weird spots.
Because of the Cambridge Center. So,
yeah, shout out to him.
Give him the love. Go buy something.
So good.
buy a book. Read it. You deserve it. Your brain deserves the food. What else? Next is what? You got the Skinner Foundation?
Yeah, hold on. I'm blanking on the motherfucker's name. Francis Mechner. I'm going to cut this out.
I was going to say, dude, don't. Spoiler alert.
Francis Mechner, man.
It's your boy Mex. The Mex.
He's so cool, dude.
I knew that motherfucker from back in the day. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
Joking. used to play jacks in the streets and hopscotch.
Wait, I would love to get him on a conversation sometime.
Is he still alive?
Yeah. Unless he's died in the last 9 months. I hope not.
Okay.
He's my fucking hero, dude. If I have a hero in behavior analysis that's living right now, he was a Jew that lived through the Holocaust.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude.
That's a different level person,
dude. Yeah. Like, there was some insane shit that happened to that guy in his life. Hold on. I'm getting too excited on that. Yeah. All right. Real bad.
Skinner Foundation.
All right, so the B.F. Skinner Foundation, really just preserving everything they possibly can about B.F. Skinner. Oftentimes, these sort of organizations serve as like an archival place, but also a place where they can get things out that weren't already out there. So anything that had to do with notes or pictures and things like that. There's actually a really cool Instagram feed coming out of these folks now, just sharing old pictures of Skinner and his life, which I think is amazing. Pretty dope. The OBM Network is really, I think, a part of ABI as an affiliate, but I kind of chunk it off as separate just because what they do is really focused on organizational behavior management, providing services for people to learn more about that. The Behavior Analysis Leadership Council, relatively new in the game. This is their fourth annual conference this year. I'm actually helping organize one of their tracks. So most people are like, what the hell is this BALC, this bulk stuff? And what I see them as is trying to really deliver the leadership and like additional training that you need that's not in your verified course sequences. So if you're struggling with anything that has to do with business, the large, you know, moniker of leadership, those sort of things, the how-to on the business and running those sort of things, staff turnover and such, that's what they're trying to position out. I love that their last one had a RBT track, which I don't think they're continuing, but like, they have content that is not your typical. They had a comedian at lunch that had a disability that just got done speaking with the United Nations before she showed up there to deliver some stuff. And she was hilarious. Like, it was one of the coolest lunch sessions I've ever been to. So some pretty dope stuff. And then, what else? I think that's a lot of the main players. I always forget someone, I'm sure.
I mean, honestly, there's just so many. I mean, I think we should do a quick recap. So we have Midwestern Association of Behavior Analysis, MABA, that became ABAI.
Yep.
We have the BACB, who is the governing body of the certificate. We have APBA, which is the home of professional guidance and professional stuff. We have the center, Cambridge Center of Behavioral Studies, which is basically, you know, the place where you get all the cool. If you want the cool punk rock reading that we always talk about on this shit, we're like, did you read Izzy Goldiner's Blue Books? Like, you want to be a cool kid? Go buy that shit. It's $13. And B.F. Skinner Foundation, which is preserves his works. The cool thing about the Skinner Foundation is that you can also buy some of his stuff that you can't get anywhere else. Or if you do find it on Amazon, it's $8 bajillion for some reason. Like, you can get a nice copy of The Technology of Teaching and that kind of thing, which is kind of hard to find. And then you have OBM Network, which is, you know, organizational behavior management stuff. And then Balk. Every time I see that, I think of Balky Bartokomus, which was my nickname in college.
Which so they're
I
trying.
Think of Perfect Strangers. I think of Cousin Larry running around making jokes.
And the correct pronunciation is B-A-L-C. They really, really harp on me because I shorten it all the time. I want to say real quick, there was 39 minutes ago, the BACB tweeted, listen to the latest episode inside the BACB podcast for information about the upcoming changes to our international focus. Wonderful. So it's almost like they were listening to us. We started this literally 50 minutes ago. But no, I'm really stoked to see that they're putting more stuff out there because really these are discussions other people need to be having. I just want to focus on orienting folks to what is out there and what's going on because no one seems to tell you these sort of things. Right, now there's
so we
one
got
area.
Professional organizations. We got now governing this, bodies. Next is what?
So there's this area of credentialing and licensure that I don't think I'm the best to get into, but there's a few different acronyms out there, which are specific to autism services and looking at organizations that are providing services, typical ABA therapy services. So if anyone wants some things to go look into, there's CASP. I actually don't know this one. Do you know this one? I need to say this
correctly. I saw it for the first time in my email just the other day, and I don't know.
I just want to say it correctly because I'm at... Yeah. So there's CASP, the Council of Autism Service Providers, which really their mission, I'm going to pull it up here. I want to make sure that I'm reading these things off so nobody yells at me. The Council of Autism Service Providers supports our members by cultivating, sharing, and advocating for provider best practices in autism services. Cool. So that's one. The next one, BHCOE.
It's Behavioral Health Center of Excellence.
Yep, BHCOE is...
it's a credentialing body that evaluates your practices and the quality of services and standardization of practices within an organization.
So their mission...
declares you to be excellent or not.
Their mission is dramatically improve quality of care for consumers across the world through accreditation of organizations providing behavior analytic services. Vision being... the trusted leader in standards development for organizational best practices. I think they've been around about 5 years or so-ish, which this also brings up two others that I don't know much about, which are, I didn't even have the time to research here, but again, the whole point of this like mini section is that this stuff's over my head on the specifics of what's going on outside of orienting everyone to them. But there's the QABA, which I think is a qualified ABA, like, credential people are working on the BICC, which is like behavior intervention credential of some sort. So if anyone's looking at autism specific, we could branch this into an entire like mini series of itself of what's going on with those, but be aware that they're out there. But I wanted to just kind of set the stage to bring this up for oftentimes I see on, someone threw this on Reddit for me the other day, when I was sharing something about, just how the field's kind of structured. And they said, who elects people in these roles? And like, how do we know that these people are qualified to be making these sort of decisions? And I was like, you know, that's a great question.
That's an unbelievably good question.
And almost all of these are elected positions, or they're nonprofits with elected positions, or they're nonprofits with the board of directors that are selected to help guide whatever mission it is. So I really don't think that any of these are like organizations that you can't work yourself into. I'm sure there's certain positions, like I couldn't just work myself into the CEO of the BACB. There's one spot, like the chances are pretty slim, and I don't think I'm equipped for that. But many of these that I've talked about, the B.F. Skinner Foundation, Cambridge Center, ABI, I've all served some sort of volunteer role for various different capacities. ABI was helping on the team of creating and their second education conference, the material out of that. Cambridge Center, actually, we have a project where we're supposed to be getting a lot of their stuff in ebook format. We ran into some hiccups, and I've been stagnant on that project for 2 years, still stagnant on it. And so my point here is, like, you can work into these sort of things. Have you been serving in any capacity in anything that we've talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I did the public policy thing for a year for WABA. But not really, man, this is where I struggle. Like when we're talking about these things, I'm like, I don't know. No, I have not. And mostly because it goes back to what we're talking about is the ideological and the way the systemic bend is in a lot of these organizations, that they're so tied historically to academia that they very much follow that kind of hierarchical structure and that kind of like pay your dues and move through the political landscape of their systems and organizations. And they're really, really slow moving.
Yeah.
Because of it. Because they're mostly bureaucratic agencies run by ivory tower academics. So like they're not risk takers for the most part. And like for who I am and how I roll and the life that I live, it is an excruciating process to participate in systems like that. So I abstain respectfully. Maybe one day that'll change if I get older and I'm slowing down a little bit and my brain can handle mind-numbing snail's pace evolution. But no, I do not serve on it. And honestly, like for some of these, I don't really know if I see a ton of value. I mean, the BACB makes it possible for you to make a living. So that's kind of like, there is no choice to participate in that, in my opinion, if you're a behavior analyst. ABAI, you can take it or leave it. I mean, they have a plethora of information on their website. And actually, they have some recorded talks that you can access for CEUs that are really good. And they're deep. Like, they're for the learned. Like, you have to already have, they have a couple on behavioral economics and behavioral momentum theory that were done by legitimate EAB folks. That if you're not, that could go over your average practitioner's head. They've even gone over my head in a couple of those talks. Like, and again, not to say that I'm necessarily distinguishing, but I mean, they're advanced.
You can be 10 years in the field and you're still like, I don't understand a single word this person's saying. Which one that I forgot is the Society for the Quantitative Analysis of Behavior.
Squab.
So epic. Good. Squab. I hope there's a Squab listener that's now feeling revitalized because it wasn't.
Shout out to the Squabbers. Shout out to Squab. APBA, I've never been, but I have been in contact with people that are part of it as a result of being in that position I was in before. And so, I'm not a conference junkie either. Yeah.
See, for me, it was just, there was too many to go to. And I literally go off of like, which one can I get to next? And like, what's the most economical situation? And for the most part, I was just like a baby of ABI, and so I planned my time around that, and APBA was always a couple months before, and there was no way that I could afford two professional organizations like that back-to-back in conferences.
It gets expensive, just
so damn
man.
Expensive, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, your certificate's, what, $200-$300 every couple years now? Your ABAI is like $450 a year, I think.
Yeah, and you're talking about hotel, Memorial Day
weekend. I'm just
talking
about the membership.
Yeah, I'm talking about You're usually paying anywhere from $500 to a couple.
Yeah, you're talking about a $1,500 trip, $2,000 trip to get to ABAI and hang out.
Yeah.
APBA, I don't know even what it costs because I didn't even bother to look.
I do have some colleagues
that have been a couple times.
It's a similar rate. I think they're a little bit cheaper, but relatively speaking.
And Cambridge Center is just like buying a $15 book, so that's an automatic. Skinner Foundation, same thing. OBM Network. We recorded an episode that we didn't publish, so my opinions on OBM are not necessarily ready for public consumption, but let's just say that personally, I don't know if I necessarily see a ton of value there, but that's me. I don't know anything about the BALC for me to have comment on that. I can say about the credentialing bodies that we were talking about, it just depends on what your business and what your organization needs. I mean, I personally generally don't think that additional regulatory oversight, even if it's well-intentioned, is a good thing. Yeah. So if I were personally a business owner, I would not pursue those things because I know for a fact for one of them, for example, like the BHCOE makes a claim that you join a network where you can negotiate for higher rates. You know, maybe it's true. Maybe I don't know the validity of that or really how much the ROI is based on the cost.
Yeah.
To really have a commentary on that. Which, but I can say that the hoops that you would jump through and or the way that it's structured, unless you're operating with a medical model. Like, for me personally, I would prefer, like, if I start a business tomorrow, I'm going to run an educational model. I'm not even going to run in a medical model because I think the medical model is, like, doomed to fail, number one, and number two, really ties your hands. So, like, that automatically disqualifies any impact that those things would have for me. So, as far as, like...
But anybody starting in the medical model or considering starting a business, like, you need to soak up everything, I think, not only in the field and all these resources, but, like, that's one that I would say, like... Soak up everything that they've offered freely available since you can be informed. I agree with that. Yeah.
And that's why we're doing this episode because I think no matter what, despite my personal opinions, which probably I shouldn't put out there as freely as I just did, but whatever, all these things do still matter. And that's kind of the point. The point is even if you're not a member of ABAI, it impacts you as a member of the field.
Yes, 100%.
Even if you're not a member of APBA, it impacts you as a member of the field. Because these are movers, they're shakers, they're decision makers. They have gravity around them. And, you know, you need to know where the centers of gravity are in whatever situation you are so that you can properly orient yourself. That's what's super critical about this.
Just like we're trying to understand the environmental variables that are influencing the behavior that we're trying to manage day to day or help people out with, 100% the same way. These are just the system variables that you need to be aware of as to kind of just a little bit of like – what they do and what they're doing, like keeping in touch with these sort of things gives you an idea of what's up. So where I wanted to pivot this to is this is kind of like where issues start to rise and there's kind of like a what really happens discussion. And so we can take this literally off of the example of the BACB making that announcement we discussed in the beginning. And it was made on... the 30th or 31st of 2019, December, depending what time zone you're in and such. And within about 24 hours, 48 hours, there was a position statement that was made by ABI stating that they had no recollection of this sort of thing was coming down the pipeline. And so for me, really what I want to talk about here is just some examples like that are really the reality of the situation, which is... if you want the too long didn't read, the TLDR, it's just, hey, we're no more removed from and we're just as susceptible to contingencies than just any other human organism out there or organism out there. And it seems like there is continued disagreement and lack of coordination going on. And for what reason, I don't know, because that information is never really received. But we've got some stuff here as examples of that have been public knowledge out there. That we can give as examples. So what is the full picture to kind of wrap up? Like my question for this ABI, BACB changes and things like that, like what's the full picture going on? I don't know. I just know what's consistently talked about is the Association Behavior Analysis International, the Association Professional Behavior Analysis, and the Behavior Analyst Certification Board continually off and on just don't get along. And when we're talking about these things influence us, I find it quite unfortunate that there's no cohesion amongst these sort of organizations. Have you ran into that yourself?
I mean, I think it's obvious from just watching the way that everything plays out constantly. Who's wagging the dog, or the dog's wagging its ears, or who fucking knows who where. Like, follow the queen scenario. Here's one thing I want to comment on that though, is that whenever you talk about professional organizations. And this goes back to kind of my commentary on its roots and origins from like the academy, is that is very much a cultural element of the academy. You know, a lot of cattiness, a lot of like territorialism, a lot of senseless need for ownership over everything in such a way as to restrict the way information flow occurs. So it's like a heavy control function. And it makes no sense to me in terms of like what those types of entities typically are intended to represent, which is supposed to be like the most open opportunity to for expression and freedom to exist and think. But that is to be what it is. So as far as infighting, I don't know. I guess I kind of always assumed that the BACB and ABA had a good ABAI had a good relationship because, you know, passing off something like a course sequence to another organization is kind of a big deal, even though you do have in your notes here, and I didn't realize this, that that ABAI posted out, for example, in relation to this announcement, a notification that it was the first time they had even heard it.
and they passed crazy. Off. They passed off. They reported that they passed off this verified course sequence and finished everything like 24 hours before the announcement was made. So they're kind of like, everything seemed perfect, and then kaboom, which this is where I honestly do not know who to trust when there's conflicting information. And it's not that it's not that I distrust people. It's just like when there's conflicting information, I don't know what to do. And dude, to be like real talk with you, I told you this last time we recorded, I was working on this piece that's just kind of like, I don't want to be a part of like who said what and who did what and this sort of shit, because it's clear that you can't get the information to even do those sort of things. So like,
yeah, that's
topical. You know, topical things in the field, like I am so glad the BA Analyst Certification Board is putting more stuff out in like this podcast, because let's just hear it. Like, let's keep putting pressure on them.
Disambiguation is important.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is that, like, you know, we did the year in review episode, and I feel like we've had such a light tone on the podcast the last few recordings. Mm-hmm. Hopefully by now people have listened to those episodes and us having fun, and just looking at the outline for this topic, dude, my blood pressure rose like 7 fucking points.
Well,
I don't know what it is about this topic that makes me want to go like all full blown Sam Kinison pissed off, like screaming into the microphone. But like, it just, it for some reason it impacts me in this like emotional place. And I if I had to really put my finger on it, I really think it's the bizarre kind of slow-moving lack of... It just seems so out of touch.
I also feel like I'm in fucking middle school again, dude.
That's what I mean. Like, there's just this out-of-touch component to it that, again, I don't want to call anybody bad, because I think anyone who works in these organizations, they are mostly volunteer organizations, with the exception of the BACB. I don't know, is ABAI a volunteer organization?
Yeah. There's paid positions, but they're volunteer organizations.
Well, like, your state organizations are volunteer organizations. I can say that unequivocally.
But CalABA, as a affiliate of ABI and like one of those state organizations, they have paid roles. There's people that are paid there, and it's because they've worked themselves into a place where they've got the budget to do that. So
okay. Well, they're the exception, not the rule. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, but I think I think that my thoughts are that we should have much more of those sort of entities running out there. Like, we should be treating them as a business, right?
So let me, that's the point. The point I was trying to make was that we have like all these different entities going on, all these different people who work really hard to make this possible.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, the way that the decisions get made, mostly because they get made by committee, by people who are trying to balance out such infinite amount of variables and trying to please such a wide array of an audience, that ultimately they end up disappointing everybody, because it's impossible to any decision that you would come to that would meet consensus criteria is going to automatically be so disappointing for certain people who are actually vocal.
Well, and there's also active. There's also active counter control, man. So in 2019, there was a meeting of ABI affiliate chapters that happened. This is just a thing that I know of because I know people. I'm not disclosing my mole.
Oh shit! Listen to that. I hope the audience like, dude, Ryan knows people. I don't know if you guys heard.
I don't think this information is super valuable to know.
I know people who know people. No big deal.
But essentially what happened is everybody was invited from those state organizations to come together and just say, you know, how could we do things better? How could we information resource share, stuff like that? There was active, This was independently done as like, this would be a good thing for people to organize together and do. It wasn't, there was a call to action from anybody on the top down of any of these organizations. But what did happen was attempts to shut it down because it was perceived to be the role of somebody else or another entity. So
it was treated like a Protestant revolt.
Right? What are you talking about?
You are dispelled from Europe.
What are you talking about?
Get in the Mayflower and get the fuck out.
Oh my God.
It's ridiculous, dude.
And so, yeah, the point is this stuff happens. The point is it should. And the point is it does because we're all humans, right? And the thing is anybody who's engaging in this, I doubt they're listening to this, but they are, like, you're just working against the very values of the field that you're here in the first place. Or it's time to step out. It's time to step away. Like, things are changed to the point that it needs to alter, right? But the fact that this stuff happens.
I think the most important question that I see here that you have written down from whoever it was, like, someone's like, why should I even care about this? First of all, I don't know who that guy is, but thank you. You're the best.
Dude, Reddit.
Secondly, that is, like, for real, like, why would anyone care about this?
God. I mean,
it's hard to tell, isn't it? Like, you're sitting there, you're like, actually, holy shit, I just wasted an hour and a half of my life. Like, ultimately, I think the answer is, I don't care at all.
Do you think
we would get a strongly worded letter if we published a podcast where the conclusion was, all right, folks, all right, listeners, bottom line is, just don't give a shit. Don't care about this even a little
bit. Dude, I guarantee there's going to be some hate mail that comes in from this, if not a cease and desist. I would not be surprised if there's a cease and desist on there, or some strongly worded emails.
A strongly worded letter. Sir, I accept your freedom.
You have
of speech,
overstepped
however,
your boundaries.
But please take the strongly worded letter to denote my absolute satisfaction with your actions.
If anyone's listening to this and you decide to send that, there may be a publication of that publicly on the web after too. So just really think about what you do there.
That's great.
And the thing, and there's so many thoughts, man. I don't want to get away from, like, the point of these things where, like, that realization of, like, why does this shit happen? Why do I care? It's for me, it's an unfortunate byproduct of being humans that this stuff happens, and it happens in our field, and it's no different. You have roads to choose. You can choose your own fucking path. You can create one that I don't even know of. But it's like, do you want to be informed by these because they affect you, or do you just want to ignore them and do your day-to-day and however that is and just kind of go by it? And it really depends on what role you want to play in the field. And so if you're looking to eat in the field and you're looking to be a part of these organizations, or ideas that these organizations are chasing, whether you're going to be a part of them or not, like, this is a sense your kind of start to your lit review and what's going on out there. Yeah. One of the things that I think is the most ridiculous, since we're on this sort of topic, is what I'm titling Silent Letters.
Again, that is literally, I mean, it's the fact that there's a category of silent letters, which is.
And so this most recent one I was actually tied into, and I've got historical ones we can link to.
Why is it called that?
And this is literally me making this up. So if anybody's like, I want to see all these silent letters, you're not going to search them and find them off that term. But what it is there's folks that disagree with something about how something's being ran or decided upon in the field. And so there's actively one going on with the ABI, BACB sort of stuff going on, in which some body of folks say, we're going to take on, you know, writing this letter, stating Damn our position, man. And then we're going to have everybody sign it and send it to this entity.
Right. So they're op-eds, basically.
Yeah, just stating a position with a bunch of people to sign, and we send them along. The one that was most recent that I was a part of accidentally, which is not big news now, and it should have never been big news in the first place, I think, for the most part, was built off of what some people may have seen on the Hank Schlinger interview that I did. And so Hank Schlinger really went into ABI as I would say, a more traditional behavior analyst, leaning into a lot of the Skinnerian ways, radical behaviorism and such. And I just happened to capture something similar and put out there. This was not like from my video, but what it is if you want context as the specifics of the disagreements that were going on and the points being made, go watch that video. We'll link it. But there was an extensive letter really questioning whether or not the journals of ABI, if they should be publishing research outside of these traditional avenues. So things like delay discounting, things like behavioral economics and like those larger branching relational frame theory, ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, really saying we don't think that people that have those backgrounds should be in editorial positions, and nor should we be publishing research from those sort of areas. And that was what was written in a nutshell, and then passed around for these people via email to go sign, and they send it out. So this is an example of one of those silent letters. The specific one on how I got tied into it is the opposition then, because you've got the protagonist, you got the antagonist, you got these characters fighting back and forth.
It's like the Federalists and like whatever. Like, it's just ridiculous.
So as a counter, what happens is the other side writes a letter, they have people sign, they go out there. For this specific one, someone cited the video that I'd done as like evidence of the position and why it is bad to have this sort of position out there. And that's why I got involved. And I was just like, hey, I put out the first part of a multitude of parts of series of content on different perspectives and behavior analysis. It was not meant to be used as leverage as one side or the other. Stop it, was my point. Like, knock it off. And really, what was interesting here is there was 200 people over about a week that signed one of these silent letters saying, like, we're all for the diversity of the different fields and different studies going on in these different journals. Which is cool. I'm on that same side. But I was also on the side of like, why is this a fucking argument in the first place? Why are we putting attention towards this? And so as a fun, like, fuck you sort of thing, which now I'm going to reframe this. So I missed part of the story. But what happened when that was linked is it created a situation where Hank was like, I want you to pull the video down, which is the first video I've ever had to pull down. And so my thing is like, I'm going to tell people I have to pull this down. It just doesn't disappear. And so I told everyone I had to pull it down. You get a bunch of questions as to why, right? Dude, overnight, there's over 200 folks that are like, why was this video pulled down? What the fuck's going on?
Dude, that is the best video you've ever done too. Like,
dude, and it was so fun. And
Hank Schlinger for president.
Yeah.
Hashtag Schlings 2020.
What was so interesting for me there though was, it took them, however long to write this letter in opposition to this other silent letter. And then they circulate it for a week to get all these sort of feedback points, all these people to sign the letter. And within 24 hours of pulling it down, there's more people that are pissed that it was pulled down than there were and even on the letter that was signed. And what was crazy is it wasn't even known that this was a thing. So I had to essentially orient those 200 people to, hey, these silent letters happen. They get, this infighting sort of stuff happens. And so what I did is within 24 hours, I replied to the email just saying, by the way, there's more people in support of this shouldn't even be a discussion. It's disheartening that these sort of disagreements occur than there are in support of your damn letters going back and forth. Like, and what I want to highlight here is I think there's a huge, like we talk about the in the past episode, different capacities, the practitioner research gap. There is a huge gap in the sense of what should be prioritized as problems and what should be getting attention. And this was one of those. I'm like, wow, why are we paying attention?
I feel like
to this?
There's a common euphemism that one could use in this scenario. Something about opinions and assholes, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
If any of the listeners can remember that, please help us out.
Please help.
Write in the comments section.
It eludes me.
And dude, I have respect for both sides of these arguments. Like, I literally was like, I'm taking time away from both of these communities because I appreciate both sides. Like, I try to be as agnostic between the two as I can.
Oh my God, Switzerland sucks.
Well, dude, It's like, I love the workings of the contextual behavior science group. I love the historical perspectives of the traditional folks and where that's coming from and all that sort of stuff. It's like, I can't pick friends on one side or the other.
You can't pick between your cousin and your brother or whatever, yeah.
And that's it. It's just like, so that's where the point of this is just like, this shit happens. It's unfortunate it does. Know that it happens.
It almost makes you wonder. There should be a forum for people to have these open conversations to discuss why such disagreements arise and how can we possibly come to an amicable resolution to them? It's weird. They just seem so controversial to me.
Though. I wonder what we'd call it. It's almost like an exchange. What would that be called? It's like an exchange of controversial ideas, information.
And thought. It's so weird.
And I don't want people to think that I'm like laughing at any one person. It's just, it's one of those things where it's comical to realize, in a way to kind of like, I guess, cope with the fact that we're not immune to these sort of situations occurring as, behavior analysts knowing these sort of contingencies. Right. So,
you know, what's funny about this just whole idea though, is that there's a couple different things that come to my mind. Number one is like, if you're a new person coming to the field and you're trying to figure out the ABA landscape, like, whoa, how do you even begin without just going total insano nerd out mode and like just making friends basically that only basically joining the cult of behavior analysis? How do you possibly navigate understanding who these things are, what they are, how do they like, why do they matter? What influence do you have on them? How do you participate in them to actually use them for what they're intended to rather than getting used by them for money and like conference fees? And also just in general makes me think of a broader question. Like, man, are human animals capable of organizing in any capacity, even around something as innocuous as a science, without fighting with each other? Like, honest to God, the level of tribalism within what we do is so hilariously reflective of every other aspect of living that it seems almost like this inevitability that we should just accept and learn to love as a process, because eliminating it seems impossible.
You could end the podcast right there. That was fantastic, man. There's a few others that I listed here that I wanted to get into, but they're not worth it now that we're going through this. There will be a couple things that we do link. One of them is a straight up description that I shared with Dimitri of an APBA write-up that was essentially highlighting what was going on in 2011 on the back and forth in the field. And what is remarkable to me is we have these same problems going on 10 years later.
Yeah, 10 years later. This letter, you read it, you're like, what the fuck? How is it possible that it took... So Skinner said it in 19... Well, first of all, Skinner wrote it in like 54... Science, Human Behavior, 56, whatever year that was. He said it again in some interviews in the 60s.
He said it
again in Beyond Human Dignity and Walden 2 and whatever. He said it 8 days before he died.
Why is why are we not acting to save the world? He wrote that.
They released it 2010. Someone else did it too. It's just like some guy who's like, this is fucking absurd. And we're a couple of assholes sitting on the internet trying to figure out, I wonder, because we're the guys that are going to find the solution. It's like, you know what? I'm feeling good about this, actually. I like our odds. I like our odds on this. I think we can do it.
Dude, that video that I'm making, dude, is literally like this realization, like I blindly signed up for a field. I had no clue what I was getting into.
I know, man.
And in a sense, like I don't want to discourage people from things, but I want to be aware. And for me, it was after 10 years, I think I figured out where I fit in. And, that fit in is digital nomad creating content. I contract some of the affiliate chapters of ABI and like help them create stuff. I am this year. Like, I'm not opposed to helping in the capacities in which I've realized that I'm good to help them out in, but I've also learned like through the ABI education conference I was a part of is like helping plan in that context. Like, that's not where I'm useful. I actually had the Nevada ABA chapter one year. There was folks that were like, hey, we want him elected. And I was like, elect somebody else. Cause like, I hate those roles. And they were offended. And I was like, listen, like, I will help you in this capacity that you don't have written in for free. You get the person that you want because there's two of us that are people are trying to vote upon here. And I'm going to
decline.
I just respectfully decline. You get double the work and all pissed about that. maybe things have changed.
You can't wear your hat backwards in a board meeting for a state board, and that automatically disqualifies you, because let's be honest, you're not going in there without a fucking t-shirt and a backward hat on. So that's just the thing they would have to accept.
Maybe that's been, dude, I had a secret goal in behavior analysis, which is I wanted to wear a t-shirt and a backwards hat on an invited panel. And I got that in the Hoosier ABA conference last year.
There's do people a bunch give of folks... you shit for how you dress at conferences?
No. And,
I've always wondered about that.
No, I've had some friends like, what the fuck are you wearing? Dude, but like, that doesn't
Mark
count.
Mark was wearing those rainbow suspenders a few years ago. The corduroy pants. I fucking love him so much.
Dude, well,
I was like, that guy, like he oozes no fucks.
Yeah.
I'm like, bless you, dude.
Dude, if there's a field that's more ripe for like going against the grain,
to do that shit.
If there's a field that's more ripe for going against it, it's ours, dude. Like, not only like where it's at and the history of just everything being so similar, but also like the learner's always right. You can't blame the finger and point at people. Like,
oh yeah,
dude. If you instituted a dress code at one of these places, the field would lose their shit.
If it was up to me, dude, like on the real, and maybe this is like people living in California be like, of course he's a Midwesterner or whatever the fuck, but like I would dry fit everything all the time, period. It's the most comfortable material ever made. I can't believe that clothes are made of anything else anymore. Like, why do we still have cotton clothes?
I'm basically wearing that right now.
it's the best fucking type of comfortable clothing ever made. And I want to so bad just do a panel or something where that's what I'm, just like a hoodie and like straight up sweatpants. I mean, I'm talking about dry fit underwear, like all the way. No fucks. Like the best.
Yeah, dude, I'm sure that there's things where it's like, I don't know that it was discussed or whatnot, but like the cool thing, here's one valuable lesson I learned out about backwards hat and shit like that, is in a sense, you filter out much quicker who you want to work with and who you don't.
Because they're like, fuck that guy.
Yeah,
fuck
dude,
you, buddy.
Dude, if you... it just speeds up knowing who to work with more.
Yeah, it does. I'm surprised that you would... I actually would imagine based on what you do and kind of like what your area is, that it's probably just kind of like people think it's some idiosyncratic thing, you know? Like Guy Ritchie wearing a suit or something.
I had this... you know, it's funny. I've been working on getting all my personal video photo archives, which aren't super extensive, but I've been getting them off of like super old drives and devices the last couple months. And because I get people saying like, oh, did you do that to like brand and like be a thing? And it's like, I used to wear a hat all the time. And then I got into behavior analysis. And what happened is the complete opposite. Is behavior analysis pushed me into this like, where's that? The not the plaid, but like the diamond.
Button shirt?
No, the diamond sweaters. You know what I'm talking about? Argyle. Argyle. I was like wearing the collar and the Argyle, which is dope, dude. I still wear it now and then when I want to.
Who the fuck says, which is dope, man? I'm wearing an Argyle sweater. It's totally fucking dope.
Dude.
No, it is not, man.
I don't want to hate on it. I feel like there's certain situations which I can pull it off still. But
yeah, okay. I'm with you.
The thing was, is it's really funny. I'm literally looking back at stuff from 2007 to 2012, and it's just like there's hats on in almost all of them. It was just like one of those things where I realized like I can wear a hat again, because I wasn't like I don't know where I ever felt that way. No one ever told me, you know, don't wear a fucking hat, but it was just like I stopped doing it, and I was like, I'm gonna do that again. Part of it was like I had cash and I could buy things again after grad school, you know, like I had disposable income.
A sweater with my money. Fuck,
but there's one thing that I wanted to talk about real quickly, that is one that I'm pretty stoked that'll be coming out soon, is one of the biggest things that happened in our field, which was really interesting to me, which was around the same time when I was considering to commit to the field, was the Association of Behavior Analysis International. They have an elected president every year. And Pat Fryman was the elected president for the 2010 to 11 term, essentially. You come in... usually on a 3-year term, you're kind of like observe the ropes for a year. You are the president, and then you're kind of past president and you hand things off the next year. And during his term, he wrote a resignation letter. I am doing my best to find a publicly accessible copy that I don't upload myself, so I don't get shit for it. So find one on the internet somewhere that I can link to. But it's the first time and only time still that someone resigned, essentially quoting, citing a lot of these power struggles and these back and forths, and it was very hard to get things done, wasn't what he expected, etc. But what's super exciting is part of my project with him in Omaha is him discussing that on camera at length, no fucks given.
Wow. Amazing.
Yes.
I can't wait to hear that.
Oh, it's going to be so good, man. And the thing is I think we need to hear of some of the perspectives from people that go through those sort of things. Because it's not, my point of bringing this up is this is not just from the punk dudes on the internet, on the podcast. This is being felt from all angles. So it's really like, are we ever going to overcome this? I don't know. But like, I think we could if we got together and just shook hands and figured out how to work with each other.
I hear you on that, but I would like to say this, and hopefully somehow, somewhere, some way this recording makes it into the ears of some of these people, some of the people we've wanted to talk to on the podcast, and or not even just on our podcast, but maybe in some other forum to really come out and say what they think. But I think that there is a lack of intellectual honesty at that level, and a lot of guardedness and a lot of self-protection for survival reasons that people engage in, because those types of power hierarchies in terms of like in terms of those types of organizations are toxic, and they have a heavy they have heliocentric level gravitational pull on what could be someone's career. And especially if you have lofty, ambitious aspirations from that type of level, that you don't want to potentially jeopardize your future and or put yourself in a position to be at odds with people who could.
And those are the sort of things,
finger on the scale.
Those are the sort of things that Pat cites is like what went through.
You don't even have to tell me. You don't even have to say that for that to be such an obvious outcome. Because again,
you know what I learned when I was
academia.
You know what I learned when I was working with him on that project was. He said that the resignation happened, and long story short, there was some folks saying, we want you to come explain yourself. And he's like, everything.
Hold on a second.
Hold on. No, let me keep
going. Let's just role play that real quick.
Hold on. We'll get there. Hold on. Let me keep going. I promise. And so he goes, you know, all the hotels are booked. I resigned. I'm going to spend some time with family. And they're like, no, we'll find a way to make this happen. So what they did is they literally brought him in and sat him against a divided community of the left and right, not politically, but of the more traditional folks and the other folks that, you know, the people that agreed with him and didn't agree with him. And they had him explain himself. Would you ever do that to anybody? Like, imagine if your employee resigned and you said you have to come explain yourself to both sides. Dude, that would be grounds for a fucking lawsuit.
We're going to need you to explain that.
Dude, I would, oh my God. Like I just learned of, the, like, what? Like, I
I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
10 years ago.
I don't think so, Lumberg.
10 years ago, maybe it's not happening anymore, but the evidence of these things still causing issues 10 years later is really apparent still. So it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's weird. He didn't do it, did he? I guess we'll save that. But tell me off camera.
No, he went in. He went in and talked to him.
I can't. Did he really? Wow.
Yep, and he talks about the experience.
I wonder if he, like, just did it sitting with his back to them.
You know,
like,
where...
And his asshole hanging out. Just tell me, like, I would just... Like, that is just so ridiculous.
You know, the icing on the cake is I'm already getting shit for working with him on this project. Because it wasn't with the right people involved, air quotes,
Pat
supposedly.
Pat is the awesomest dude that does this shit.
Yeah, so what it is the folks of us, like Pat and I and others that are working on this, is like we're getting flack from people saying essentially statements around like, you should have worked with us, or we're disappointed that you're doing this with them and not with us and things like that. And it's like,
yeah, see,
what
again,
the fuck?
Back to the gate, and that goes back to the gatekeepers thing, right? Yeah. Like people think they own science. And that's my biggest hang up with a lot of like when we're talking about. So let's do a little bit of a closing statement here and get to that, because I think we need to wrap in a point that brings all this cohesion together. And why does this matter? Because, I mean, we've definitely had a couple instances when we're talking about this where it's a valid question to say, why does this matter? I mean, that's why it matters. It matters because if you don't shed light on the gatekeepers of people who think they own something like a science, which exists in the public domain. It exists in the scientific journals. It exists in the data metrics and the data points that were painstakingly taken by tens or hundreds of thousands of people over the course of 100 years. And it exists in the hearts and minds of those that practice it on a daily basis. And it also exists in places that we haven't even discovered yet, because that's also part of a science, is discovery. Then it is absolutely counter to the spirit of that thing to have someone lay claim to the possibilities that exist in it and the people that operate within it. And that goes back to why governing agencies might be bad and why ultimately the BACB thing might end up being a positive thing in the long run, and how, you know, it's important for people to know who the players are in any situation. Know the players. Know the background. Know the landscape. Know what are the vested interests and why do they matter? Where does the money come from? Know that nonprofit doesn't mean that you don't make money. It just means that your mission statement is serving the community. Know that even though some of them are volunteer organizations, not all of them are. Know that they all have particular agendas and they can be used to perpetuate individual people's businesses rather than the necessary professional aims of individuals within the discipline as a whole.
And they can be executed perfectly well too, right?
And they can still be positively, and you can get positive results from anything. The devil wasn't all bad, right? In some instances, some can argue that he was the good guy in the story, but I mean, that doesn't mean that, you know, he didn't burn heaven to begin with. So I mean, like, just be informed, be an informed consumer of information, a informed consumer of whatever's coming across your email, because I can tell you right now, what, I have 6 different emails. By the way, not to ruin this moment, but how the fuck do I have 6 emails? I have no idea. Like, why do I have 6 emails? And somehow they're all on the same listserv. So I get the same ABAI email on 6 different email addresses. But I mean, like, I have to delete 6 different times. But I mean, your inbox is flooded with information. Either it's from people using those listservs, which costs money, by the way, to send you job opportunities and or whatever informational newsletters, or just to send you updates. So, I mean, like, your data is being used. You as a certificant are integrated into a system and in some capacity that you don't have necessary control over. And the only way that you can really get a handle on what's going on is to make sure that you take the time to learn and be an informed consumer of all this stuff. So it's really critical. And that's kind of our mission here, is to get people, you know, get you to wake up again. Take your red pill and see the players for who they are and what they are, and make your own informed decision. Obviously, we're biased, but we're biased in this too. I mean, we got to be fair and say that we're coming from a particular lens from our own personal experiences, and maybe, you know, maybe we're totally wrong. And none of this conversation is necessarily geared to any specific people. So I hope no individual person.
There's nothing I stated here, especially in the examples, that wasn't factually correct.
And like, I couldn't cite information on Illuminati coming from a soul. That would be horrible.
Man,
but
we should form that.
The Behavior Illuminati?
Yeah.
Is that a thing where you get matching tattoos and a sweet leather jacket? Or is that like,
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. I'm not opposed.
All right. Awesome. But anyway, that's the point that we're making here.
Yeah. A few closing things I had. It's an uphill battle. Always. It always appears that it will be. And even though this like infighting is discouraging, like, I like to look at it as the systems perspective of, I now understand who the players are and what's going on, and that information can be valuable depending on what it is that you want to accomplish. It's another lesson, like, we're just as susceptible to contingencies as everyone else, despite our knowledge of behavior and how it works. And really, I expect a little bit more collaboration from people that have that sort of knowledge, though. So it'd be really dope if we could get folks together and do those sort of things. But again, I don't know how much. So I think the practical way, and the way that I kind of live this, is affect what you think you can affect, if it fits your values and your goals. But if it's outside that, appreciate the system, move on. I don't burn them down to the ground and condemn anybody whatsoever. But it's also like, I'm going to put, it's kind of like matching law. I'm going to put my energy into the things that I feel like are useful and valuable to me.
And one final note, the Flat Earth Society has 208 thousand likes on Facebook now.
God, they're going so much faster than us, dude.
They are moving, dude. Those guys are crushing. All right. Marvelous.
Have you heard the anti-space community? I guess they're
spinoff.
Oh, my God,
no. What?
But, yeah.
Oh, you mean they don't think, like, space is real, as in, like, outside of Earth, or, like,
separate
distances between people?
No, they don't think space is real. This will be an update for the next recording.
Marvelous. All
right, let's leave it there. Marvelous.
Hey, friend, before you go, please just do us one small thing. Tell a friend, tag somebody, share this with another colleague in behavior analysis. That is the best way you can help us grow. Remember, you can call in on the Anchor app, anchor.fm/thecontroversialexchange. We can actually hear you, reply to that, include them in future episodes. So that is the easiest way to get your voice heard. If you'd like it to be anonymous, just state so when you submit it, and we can make sure that it is completely anonymous as well. Now, another way that you can really help this podcast grow is leaving us a review in iTunes, specifically on the podcasting app for Apple, and it just helps us reach more people. So whether you enjoyed it or not, please leave us a review. That feedback is helpful. Now, you can find us on social media by searching for The Controversial Exchange. Typically, our handle is Controversial Exchange. However, on Twitter, it is Controversial EX, just because we had to shorten that down a little bit. Now, lastly, there are YouTube videos for every single episode now. We are putting them out there. So please make sure you go check that out, especially if you want to see the visual of like what it is and how we're talking about these sort of things. That will be your place. And one last comment, and that is a quick disclaimer. Now, the views expressed during the Controversial Exchange podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the official policy or position of any other agency, organization, employer, or company. Assumptions made in the analysis are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the authors, and since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to revision, change, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity. This podcast is to educate and inform, provide discussion, and does not constitute professional advice.